The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jeff G Tonight for the Merry Christmas episode. Merry Christmas. DanoTube says, bring back Mama JF. Unless there are developments in necromancy that are unexpected, most likely it will not be possible to bring back Mama JF. Hermit M says, Merry Christmas, JF. Merry Christmas, chat. A Christmas for a shit year. 2024 is a shit year. The shittiest year I think we've seen. I mean, there were the years of censorship that were quite dark, but I mean, we're talking about a year in which they tried killing Nick Fuentes. I got attacked by the state, by two provinces in Canada. Holy shit. I can't wait for 2024 to be done with. I think that under a Trump presidency, generally, the leftists calm down a little bit. They start doing their BLM protest and they continue their disruption. But to have those personal attacks against thinkers of the right, I've never seen an environment like this where Nick Fuentes was saying to his would-be assassin in hell, he was saying, you failed. My body, my choice. Well, it's also a great year. You know, these years of high tension, they give us good memes. And the Your Body, My Choice by Nick Fuentes was absolute just fine trolling. And I'm receiving a lot of insults these days for a half-trollish tweet that I've done. We can talk about it, the race mix tweet about Tiger Woods. I don't regret the tweet. I think it's a great tweet. But it's like, those tweets wouldn't even be edgy 5 years ago. Now we got the normies all over X, and they're like, they've never been exposed to some racial talking points, and they're totally losing it. And I got thousands of people calling me a murderer on the everyday. I got 500,000 views on this tweet. Things are going kind of well, but also kind of shitty. It's very hard to describe. And this whole escapade that has affected my life, that led me to be unable to do my shows, and then it led me also to be unable to progress in personal projects. You know, the game. I'd love to work on the game. The game, the principle of the game is so great. I'd love to develop it to production, the point where it's a playable game. Too Soon says, Jeff, I'm so glad you're back and safe. I've really missed your stream. Rodilacid says, just don't think about it other than getting paid by X. Yeah, and now X is a more serious monetization platform now. So half a million views on a tweet matters, not only because it might bring you something like $100 approximately, but it brings potential subscribers, and the subscribers will probably fund a larger and larger part, a growing part of my finances. Steven Robinson says, I want the moral signal. That is also something I would like to be able to progress on. But yeah, this year was so shitty, it was so harsh that I was unable to do much productively. Thankfully, I have a good life. I have a good family life. I have a good love. I have a good partner in my life, my new girlfriend, who is awesome. So it's hard to, in the end, despite all the shit, it's hard to be disappointed in the end. FD says, quick question, what kind of trash was in the trash truck? Well, it was accumulations of years of moving. You know how when you move, you move a small apartment to small apartment, and eventually you get into a house, you just take everything you own and you just bring it. I mean, it was things that were just not useful anymore to my life. There were broken furnitures that we were reusing, and it's like, okay, I paid this furniture $20. I bought it used. I used it for 10 years in 3 different apartments. Now it's totally broken. So that kind of big things. I got rid of my piano because my piano had pedal problems, connection problems. Certain keys were not producing the sound that they should produce. So I got rid of it. It's a piano that I had. I mean, it's been it's been delivering for me for 34 years. I had this piano given to me by my mom at 6 or 7 years old, something like this. So I got rid of my piano. This kind of big thing requires a trash truck because you can't put it on the side of the street. The regular trash guy will not collect these heavy objects. Got rid of a mattress that wasn't serving anymore. You got another piano now? I haven't bought another piano now. I would like to buy a high-quality digital piano that is the most portable and lightweight possible, but I need it to be a minimal level of professionalism to enjoy playing piano. So I need balanced touch. I need a Roland, basically, I think, because everything that they call semi-balanced touch and they don't totally register your feeling. You know, you have to have a great degree of I can play soft or I can play staccato, and I won't enjoy playing piano if I don't have this minimum. So I looked at it and it's approximately in the $1,500 range to have a piano that is minimally exciting to me. Don Argent says, I cope with a $300 fully weighted keyboard and it works well enough with Schumann. Yeah, I'm sure that, personally, I'll have the money to buy a slightly better than this, but I'm sure there are some good ones. Open Borders for Israel sends a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, Merry Christmas, JF. I hope you have a great 2025 as well. P.S. Did you go yellow for your new girlfriend? Absolutely not. My new girlfriend is absolutely a white Christian American, fully European genetics, top model appearance and looks and hips and perfect legs. My new girlfriend is quite something in terms of. It's the achievement of my life to have found a woman of this quality. Not only is she beautiful, she's like a new point on the crazy beautiful axis because she's not crazy. So she's at the top of beauty, literally, really a 10 out of 10 objectively. A 10 out of 10 with low craziness, low annoyance, a desire to serve other and love. I am satisfied. But for those who are not satisfied, there's always OnlyFans, and we have a new person going to OnlyFans. Cringe Panda was reporting. I'm not typing out her name, but this individual gave up pursuing her PhD to do OnlyFans. Her YouTube videos were all about machine learning, neural networks, STEM stuff. And see, it all starts with, oh, I'm going to talk about the intellectual stuff, but if you got boobs, eventually you find out that, oh, well, I could talk about the intellectual stuff plus boobs. And now it's like, oh, well, my intellectual videos are very, very appreciated when I show my boobs. And she's now done the transfer. She's been made into an OnlyFans whore. from being an intellectual or technical YouTuber?
I've dropped out of my PhD. I've cried so much over this decision to quit my PhD, you know, because it's a stressful decision, not that I'm particularly sad about it. I'll get into all of that in a bit later, but moving on to doing OnlyFans and content creation full-time, it's not just a career choice, it feels kind of like a gamble on the direction of my entire life.
I love that I'm not in front of such choices, because I can understand the rationale. From a money perspective, from an employment perspective, for her to continue PhD is absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. From a money perspective, she's made the right decision. Don Argent says 6 out of 10. Yeah, she's not particularly beautiful. I mean, this is not a precious beauty of any sort. She just has boobs. Now, on OnlyFans, it's probably somewhat enough to make some kind of an income. But at the same time, you know, compare, even if she doesn't rise as a superstar of OnlyFans, I can assure you she's going to make more money out of this than from a PhD. We are overtraining PhD. There's way too much competition. Everyone wants to be a teacher. Everyone wants to continue the Ponzi scheme of education. But there's going to be a lack of resource at some point, because it brings really nothing to society. We're having people waste their brain onto really unproductive endeavors. And as I was making the case on Millennial this year, we don't have good science happening right now. We don't have, in the last 10 years, the most important scientific discovery. And quote me on this 1,000 years from now. No, I'm not shitting you. Quote me on this 1,000 years from now, and it's still going to be true. The most important scientific discovery of the last 10 years is the phenotypic revolution. Other than this, no development within academia, because I've developed this theory only from private funding, from super chats, and from being on the internet. So the system is failing, and a girl like this has the choice between potentially be very rich, or at least have enough money to buy a house, or just be on a poverty salary trying to survive on the PhD. I want to talk about something, and it's concerning Cringe Panda, who was sharing this video. I've been shocked because Cringe Panda is a member of the audience. She is also a YouTuber. She is a very young YouTuber who recently came to majority, if I understand correctly. I've been shocked by this kind of picture with e-begging that she publishes. And here's why I've been shocked. There are fathers out there, and they see their daughters. They can play with their daughters when she's 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old, see her develop. And all of a sudden, she goes, when she's 16, 17, 18, she slowly slides into the slide of prostitution, the slippery slope of basically internet prostitution. And this is what I've been thinking when I see Cringe Panda started posting photos of her with, you know, just cute picture, okay, non-sexual, but you know, if you're a man, that you don't need a woman to be like to be sexualized. You know that as a man, any woman just dressed normally is sexually exciting. And she posts these pictures where she looks good and appeals to money donation. And the day before that one, it was like, I want to get some ice cream. I'm going to Dairy Queen. If you send me some Cash App donation, it will allow me to buy some more ice cream for myself. Okay, that's kind of prostitution, and I'm going to bet now, if you are the nice person who will send a donation to my Cash App, $50 cringe panda. I already love you. Trying to raise $50 to buy myself a present. Christmas tree, Christian cross, heart, panda, heart. Who knows? I might wake up to nothing or I might be very happy. You choose. This, my dear cringe panda, I don't care about what happens with you because I'm not responsible for you. I'm not your father. I'm not your husband. I really don't care. But think about it. I mean, this is prostitution. This is appealing to a sexual urge. First, I'm going to bed now. Do you understand what you're doing there? You are saying to your donors, to your simps, you're saying, you know, this is a moment. You can get me in a special moment here. I am the sleeping beauty. You can kind of profit from the fact that I will be asleep. And you can make me happy in my sleep. I'm going to bed now. If you are the nice person who will send the donation, so now appeal to the simp paying for you, and then I already love you. The generation of a false emotion. Because you're not really in love with them. You're not really going to go out with them. You're not really going to give them babies. So that's not love. You're selling false love to donors here. And you're selling it on the pretext of, hey, you can kind of get in my sleep. You have a way to get in my sleep and to get my love by sending a certain amount of money. Trying to raise $50 to buy myself a present. So here, bringing pity upon ourselves. Look at me. I'm so alone. I need to buy myself a present because no one loves me. But maybe you love me. You love me enough to be in my circle of love. Who knows? I might wake up to nothing, or I might be very happy. That is straight out extortion. Saying, "Oh, you determine my emotion. Wouldn't you want me to be happy? Well, give me $50. You want me to be sad? Well, you're not going to give me $50, but then I'll be very sad and I won't love you." I'm sorry, Cringe Panda. I'm going to say it to you directly and honestly. You're becoming a fucking prostitute. And it's okay. It's okay. I respect you. I'm a libertarian. If you want to become a prostitute, then so be it. I don't give a shit. But if I was your father, if I was a man who cared for you, I would have been hurt because this is what I lived when I saw your pictures. I thought maybe one day I'll have a daughter that falls for this thing. And how is this different from OnlyFans? How is this different from sucking dicks on the street for $15? It's not so far. It's not so far. You have a continuum of, hey, look at me. I have boobs, therefore I need money, make my emotions good. This is the extremely predatory environment in which we live, where our young girls are being presented an option without even a pimp. There's not even an evil pimp here involved transforming Cringe Panda into a prostitute. She's transforming herself. And that is dangerous. That is extremely dangerous. That this path is so easy, so out there, so easy to grab for any woman who is young, because at 18 years old, unless you're fat, you're going to be beautiful. You're going to be beautiful enough to make money from it. And it's sad that it's out there because it will destroy your life and it will change the direction of your life from becoming a good person to becoming someone who cannot even see good in the world anymore. Because once you've gone through the whole prostitution stuff and OnlyFans and selling your body, you become kind of blasé about the world, so much so that you can't form normal relationship with people. And you will suffer from it eventually as you find yourself unable to continue to be a good wife to a husband and to create actual happiness in the world, rather than display this fake, deceptive, image and cash in on it. Steven Robinson says, some young men from the chat must wife Cringe Panda up immediately. Yes, she is at the fork road. She is at the fork road, and those are not good signs. This reminds me of the e-begging of the porn actress that I interviewed, Hannah Hayes. Hannah Hayes was making these requests, sending a little pic of herself. No nude, no sexual, but just a little pic of herself. And hey, I would like to have $100 for my next dose of drugs. Very dangerous. But there are other people who take family life seriously. Kim.com. Isn't it good to see this geek who is so fat he is apparently handicapped and on a wheelchair? But look at all, it seems to be all of his children. You know, Kim.com is pursued internationally by multiple countries who want him in jail because he was the maker of Mega Upload. But he's out there in some Asian country somewhere and producing babies. And he says, the doctors said no, I said yes. Merry Christmas to you. Wow. I don't know why the doctors said no. Maybe they said because you're on a wheelchair or because you're running internationally, maybe you shouldn't have children, or maybe you're too fat to have children. I don't know why they said no, but it seems that he went on a full breeding spree, and there he is with 7 children. Some of them don't look too bad. Hey, it's good. If you're a 500-pound geek on a wheelchair, out of 7 children, a few of them will look good still. Balloon Nut says they said no because he just had a stroke. Okay, well, you know, the stroke is the sign from nature that it's time to inseminate more, not less. That's why he's in a wheelchair, not because he's fat. Oh, well, okay, I thank you for this information. I appreciate knowing the real story. But you get strokes, by the way, because you're fat. The more you are fat, the more you are fat, the more your heart is pumping, blood pressure is increasing, and eventually, poof, it pops a vessel in your brain because you're fat. So strokes are because you're fat. Don Argent says, I mean, all he had to do was eat 93.7 ground beef for a year and it'd be fine. Okay, well, he seems to have gotten away with happiness in his life. What a funny skit by Nick Fuentes, a message to his would-be assassin.
It's been a long year and I barely survived, but I did.
I feel exactly like this. I feel like this year was fucking shit. Balloon Nut sends $50. Thank you so much. He says, God bless you. God bless your family. Merry Christmas. Well, thank you so much for the generous donation. And Merry Christmas to you too.
But I did. And you failed. If you're listening from hell, you failed. I'm alive. My body, my choice. Your body, also my choice. Forever. But no, I'm kidding a little bit.
Oh, that is so fun. Nick Fuentes, what a performer. Every night, just as good. Always very intelligent and always unique. You cannot get your Fuentes fix on the internet anywhere else. This is a unique creator that the system is unable to handle, and so he had to go on Rumble and on these alternate platforms. But it's a sign that the system is sick, the fact that we can't have a Nick Fuentes everywhere. Steven Robinson says, the more you were jabbed in the past few years, the more you have stroke and turbo cancer. Yeah, I've seen claims around this. I've not seen a scientific confirmation that would satisfy me, but I haven't looked in-depth for it either. White Pill says, I hated Nick since he shit on all you guys in the alt-right back in the day, but his evolution has been incredible. He's truly a generational talent. Absolutely. comedic genius and capable of handling the toughest subjects all around. Excellent performance by Nick. An address with a balance of $13 million in USDT form has just been frozen. That stresses me so much when they do this, because it's like USDT is centralized, and if they decide that your address is collaborating with Iran or whatever, doing this or doing that, they freeze that address and you lose everything. That is so sad. So sad, because who revises this? Who reviews this? $13 million. Who was this person? Can we speak with this person? Was it truly a terrorist? I'd like to know. It sucks. Let's talk about my controversial tweet that has earned me so much hate. It's about this video. Okay, I'll show the video first, and I want you to pay attention. There is an aggression made by Tiger Woods. That's part of a hugging and celebration, but he's going to push his son. As his son scores a one-shot hole for the first time in his life, Tiger Woods will hug him and then push him. Let's see.
Really good contact. This is a great-looking shot if it's the right number.
Oh, it is the right number. Oh, it's a hole-in-one! Charlie Woods has made an ace at the fourth! And guess what? His father was actually not watching.
See the push that happened there? That's what I was commenting on.
Was actually not watching.
Now, people, and there's been for many years a mix between men's right activism and the defense of rough housing. And you see some of the people who are fighting for males' rights and talking about the madness of family courts, where I agree with them on everything, but sometimes they bring that they want to make the case that the male parent is unique. And one of the unique ways that they often bring up is, hey, the male parent will allow a more competitive environment. The male parent will do rough housing. The male parent will do play wrestling with his sons, which will provide them with a form of cognitive enrichment that mothers are barely able or are generally less willing to do. And I've always felt that it's an extremely limited view of the contribution of males to parenting. And it's stereotypical, and it is ultimately falling into the trap of all that men have to bring to this world is competition of and violence. Whereas in my experience, the male parent is so much more important for so many more things. The male parent, generally, in most families with most women, is the only person capable of being connected to reality. Is the only person capable of talking about facts. Is the only person not deluded to the point of seeing ghosts coming out of the fucking walls. So to me, the male parent, if you tell me, Jeff, the contribution of the male parent is rough housing, I'm like, oh yeah, but what about the diaper changes while the fucking insane female is fucking going to raves and on fucking speed? That's my experience of the world. So I've always been to these men's rights activists who make the case for rough housing. I've always been extremely shy to bring them forward and shy to bring attention to their argument, because I think it's weak. I think this argument ultimately is reductive on the role of the father. The father puts order in the entire family where the woman is trying to fucking blow it up. That is what a father does. That's so much more important than roughhousing and engaging your children in a competitive sport. That being said, and to me, roughhousing is not even necessary. So, of course, as an intellectual artist, I don't do this kind of stuff. I may do the celebration. I may do the hug. If I'm proud of my son, I will hug like this. I will smile like this.
Actually,
I might not even grab his shoulders in a kind of aggressive way where, it's a little too, I don't know, you know, I don't want to roughen his shoulders. Just personal respect of the personal bubble. I wouldn't do that, and I wouldn't do that in front of the camera, and I wouldn't do that on a golf course. Because there is such a thing as golf etiquette, you see? And golf is a sport that is barely a sport where class and, you know, restraint of emotion and self-control are extremely important components of the etiquette of golf. Now, up to there, I don't have anything to criticize on the behavior of Tiger Woods. But let's see what happens here.
Not what?
He pushes his son, and his son continues on the inertia from the push of his father to gravitationally starts orbiting around the white man, who gives a more respectful high five. Now, I understand what's going on. I want people who are insulting me, and they're saying, JF doesn't understand. JF doesn't play sports. He's never played sport. JF doesn't have a father. Whoa. I have a father. I've lived a great relationship with my father. In fact, my father totally trained me into bows and arrows, hunting moose, and surviving in the forest, and baseball. And he spent years being my baseball coach and running the team just so I could have a place to grow and to learn and to be physical and sport and do sports. So all of these people, they misread me. I'm not autistic to the point of not understanding what's happening. Yes, I understand that it's a roughhousing moment of celebration. Yes, I understand that Tiger Woods is pushing his son in an over-enthusiastic manner. And yes, I even understand the cognitive layer where what Tiger Woods is expressing through this push is, get the hell out. No, you did not. Get the hell out. Oh my God, I'm gonna have to start being scared that my son is going to beat me at golf. Get the fuck out of here. And it's a playful, played, over enthusiastic expression of love and support for his son. I know all this. So stop talking to me like I'm a retard who doesn't understand these things. I still see that there is some interest in this video to be analyzed from a race mix perspective. And so I wrote this tweet, which ended up being at 500,000 views. Here you can see the full reality of race mixing and parenting. Now, of course, when I write a tweet, I know what I'm doing. I know that there's going to be all these people who think I'm stupid or I'm retarded. But what matters to me is that the point made in the tweet is correct and valid. And I think it's still valid. So I think that there is something to be learned about race mixing here. You know, Tiger Woods is race mixed. Tiger Woods race mixed into producing his own son with a white Swedish woman. And there is an increased amount of aggression and violence in domestic situations of race mixed families. We're talking about even more violence than you would have in a fully black family. And that's a scientific oddity. That is interesting. You know, Oh, so if it was, if race mixing was just the dilution of one style of living and another style of living, the amount of violence you would expect in a race mixed family is in between the amount of violence you have in a white family and the amount of violence you have in a black family. But I want to bring attention to the public that it's not what we observe. It's not what we observe. In race-mixed families, there is more violence than in black families. Now, the hypotheses on this are super interesting. I can drop one right here. I don't even care. I don't think it's necessarily true. But one possible hypothesis for it goes as follows. The elites from both races both date within their race. And so on the dating market, if you end up with people who are selected at the lower end of the scale, you end up with, on average, more violent whites, race mixing with more violent blacks. And therefore, instead of going in the middle of the two populations, it's actually higher than the blacks themselves, because there's a combinatory effect of being at the low dating scale, the low place of the sexual marketplace. And therefore, you end up with people of low value who date each other and who end up abusing each other and murdering each other at rates that are even higher than black families. So I want to talk about this. And not only do I want to talk about this, I want to bring attention to something that I've been noticing in the last few years, which is that we're talking about this on Christmas. I have to lay out my full racial education program on Christmas. But so it is. So it is. That's how it happened. I want to bring attention to something that I feel is missing. There is a self-deception happening in leftists where they think that if the truth was to arise anywhere, it would have to be in a peer-reviewed scientific publication. And it's like, no, the problem is there are certain truths that peer-reviewed researchers will never even try to show. So there are certain things that you will never discover in a peer-reviewed publication. Now, in a peer review publication, you will have racial statistics on crimes. And so that's why I'm able to tell you it's scientifically proven race mixed couples are above the standard of violence that you see in even the more violent race, example, the black population in a combination between black and white. But it will stop there, see? But I'm interested in what can't the academia discover? Well, a lot. There's a lot of sub-threshold violence. There's a lot of sub-threshold aggression that exists in certain communities. And the detection of this sub-threshold aggression, the kind of aggression that doesn't even get you in trouble with the police, is a subject that the academia may never be able to fully characterize. Now, I'm interested. Why? Because ultimately, I'm a man of social media, and I see on social media every fucking day of my life a black woman going insane in a grocery store and breaking everything up. I see a black man in a 7-Eleven destroying everything, tens of thousands of dollars of damage. I see black parents in videos being just a little rougher with their children, a little more than you would be. And I'm like, this is my mission in life. I have to talk about truths that we may never talk about otherwise. When I see truths like this, this is my mission. I'm like, I'm going to write a tweet about it because this is what I'm on earth for. I want to talk about the truth that the system would miss. And I believe that the rough housing that we see here from Tiger Woods, I don't think it's dramatic. I don't think his child will be traumatized. I think his child will shovel it under the carpet, and it's not, he would tell you, he would sit right in front of me here and he would say, no, Jeff, stop worrying about me. I think it was a totally sportsman expression of joy from my father, I don't take offense to it. I don't want you to take offense, and I don't want him to consider his father violent because of this. What I want to point to is that there is an absence of restraint here that most white golfers will not have. Because white golfers, before pushing their own son, would start thinking in terms of self-control. Do I want to show this on camera? And there are people who work at golf clubs, and they've contacted me, and they said, Jeff, you're absolutely right. This was kind of out of bounds of the regular etiquette. And to all these leftists who are saying, oh, Jeff, you're trying to go after Tiger Woods because you're racist, to all of these, I say, show me one case of a white golfer who's ever done this in celebration with his son. I don't think that happens. I think it was out of bounds for golf etiquette. I don't give a shit about golf, therefore not about golf etiquette either. But I've been myself a golf scorer in the tournaments of my father's boss, Tony. My father was working for an Italian man named Tony, who owned and manufactured plants that were producing pipes. And every year, Tony would organize the golf tournament for all of his manufacturer and employees. And I remember Tony would hire me. He would hire me to stand at one of the holes of the golf tour. And I would mark the score officially for all of the participants so we can find who wins the best golf performance. So I was basically a statistician, a kid there, just writing the score sheets. And I remember Tony at some point came to me and he said, hey, boy, what's up? Here's $10. Go buy yourself a hot dog. And this was like, I was like 8 years old, maybe 8, 9, 10, I don't know. But I was a little kid on the golf course. And wow, he puts $10 in my hand. And I was like, holy shit, that is a lot of money. $10 for a hot dog. Like, I can buy 20 hot dogs with this. So I took the $10 and I went to the barbecue. And they were doing these hot dogs in large breads with Italian sausage in the hot dog and Dijon mustard in the hot dog. That was the best hot dog I've ever had. Anyways, all of this to say, I know golf culture. I know I've not seen this kind of display before. And my theory
was actually not
this push right here. My theory is that Black fathers are generally just a little more aggressive. Can I have this theory? I mean, in light of all the facts, it's not even risky to have this theory. It's most likely true. And my theory is that Black fathers tend to be a little more aggressive. When they push their children, they tend to push a little stronger. And when they smash their wife in the door, they tend to smash a little more intense. They have a little less restraint. And sometimes it plays out in the increased rate of murder, but most of the time it doesn't. Most of the time we are talking about just a sub-threshold, higher level of aggression. This is the message of my tweet. And people are just taking issue with it. I said, you'd normally expect golf to be a highbrow, nonviolent place, especially in front of cameras. Yet, as he celebrates, the Black father, Tiger Woods, finds nothing better to do than to physically push his child. This is in front of cameras on a golf course. Thus, the race-mixed child is still exposed to the parental violence of the Black father, which could explain why they are not doing any better than children from Black couples. And in fact, tend to be exposed to more violence than they would in a fully Black family. This little racial observation like this, and people start to go, bro, horrible take. how to say you never played sports without saying you never played sports. Lol. Bad take. White men also push each other like this as a sign of affection. I'm not sure they go as hard. I don't think they go as hard. Don't you think that white men need to express more high testosterone behavior than what they are currently doing, though? Up until the feminization of our culture, child beating was pretty standard practice. White men equally didn't shy away from disciplining their wives. To that, I answered, let's not become retarded just because some women have taken over society. Please, gentlemen. I'm not saying that I'm totally enthusiastic about men becoming testosterone having males again. I'm totally enthusiastic about men taking back control of society. But non-consensual violence, pushing without asking, is something that I don't think you should do in most instances. And you certainly shouldn't do this on a golf course. That's just my point. Now, someone may think differently, and I'm not arguing that we should arrest Tiger Woods. I'm saying, yeah, you know, Tiger Woods may have a little more aggression in him than I do in me. Ruffman says, bravo, JF, bravo, JF. Welcome back to Odyssey. Now that you are a backstreaming, will you be doing a full video analysis of the Lily Phillips situation? I think there is a lot to talk about regarding Lily. Will you be doing a full review of the Lily porno tape for scientific analysis research purposes? No, I will not. I will not. Certainly, I will not show porn on this show. If there was something interesting about what she says, maybe I could review the video. But I've already expressed my views on this, which is that Lily Phillips is just a whore who was disappointed that she didn't get degraded enough in the experience of having sex with 100 men. Shamrock Shake says, they degrade everything. They only play because of status and ego. So yeah, there's people saying you're retarded. You're retarded. Oh yeah, one thing that comes back a lot is Tiger Woods is not black. So Tiger Woods, when he accomplishes something great, like winning a tournament, he's the first African-American winner. He brought blackness into golf, into a very white sport. He is the epitome of the left's desire to undo whiteness. But now when Papa JF comments negatively on Tiger Woods, he's not even black anymore. People are saying he's Asian. Listen, Tiger Woods come from an African-American father and a Thai mother, okay? So you can argue that he's half Asian, half black. As far as I'm concerned, he looks black. He's going to pass as black in American culture. And anyways, my point doesn't rely on him being fully black. I did say on my tweet, and if I had known, I would have phrased it differently. I did say that his son was therefore half black, by breeding with a white Swedish woman, thus Charlie Woods is half black, half white. Well, it turns out Charlie Woods is not half black, half white. He may be a quarter black, a quarter Thai, and maybe part white. But this doesn't change anything on my commentary. I say that race-mixed couples are exposed to more violence. That is the center of my commentary. No matter if he's half black or quarter black, doesn't matter to me. So it's like there's a lot of people out there who want to catch you on a detail, but sometimes they don't realize that even if you correct that detail, doesn't change my statement at all. And now there's a PhD in genetics who wants to debate me. Debate me, bro! He says, I would love to get JF Gariepy in a room so he can explain his racist takes with science and evidence. Here he claims that black fathers are genetically prone to violence because Tiger Woods hugged his son. No. Tiger Woods did not just hug his son. He hugged his son and then he pushed him. He claims that he's a biologist. Let's see if Xmas will come early this year. Well, it's Christmas early for you, Jan Copeland. You're going to have to cope after the terrible loss that you will suffer at my hands in a debate, because I accept your invitation to debate. I accept to go on Andrew Wilson, The Crucible, to have a debate with you about race, family violence, and race realism, anything you want. We'll do this on a blood sports platform that is one of the fairest platforms I know. I know that even Andrew Wilson disagrees with me about race. We might take your side as a host. But yeah, I don't know of anything that I've stated about race that is wrong. So yeah, probably will back out of the debate. Yeah, I've seen this guy around and, you know, always going in the anti-racist direction. It's like, bro, you're young. You're young because it seems that this guy isn't aware that there was a whole internet history of race debate. That the race, that the anti-racists have always lost. The anti-racists have always lost. It's your the odds are stacked against you, Jan Copeland. The odds are stacked against you. Night King says he wants to go on his own show, so he's not a good faith debater. Oh yeah, they try to attract you to a Twitter space where they can mute you, where they're going to be flooding you with 10 people. Say, I just want to say to JF how racist this is. No. I'm a seasoned debating veteran. You have nothing to say about how the Crucible treats their guests. They have always been hyper fair to everyone involved. You know, fair and balanced, bouncing between the guests. Everyone gets to say what they have to say. They're given extra time if they want, extra time to finish what they have to say as an argument. No, I'm not going to lower myself to a Brett Weinstein who goes to beg to a bunch of leftists who are flooding him in a Twitter space and he begs to be accepted by them. I don't give a shit about your Twitter space, Jan Copeland. I want a fair debate platform, one that has a demonstrated history of letting the two sides make equal time and equal point. And answer to each other in a productive way. You know, I have a brand to protect here. Yeah, his name is Copeland. You can't make this shit up. This guy is going to cope. He's going to cope and say, I don't want to go to the Crucible. Silver Spider says, Copeland versus Rapeland. Welcome to Rapeland. Oh man, I want a little music that I can play, you know, harp. Rolling. Welcome to Rapeland. Jack Shield says Tim Pool had a guest booked who was an expert in Jewish power and manipulation of society. When Tim saw who the guest was, he canceled his show for the night. The guy had already traveled 12 hours, yet Tim never paid him for his time or apologized. Tim fired his booking agent, Cassandra, right after this. Unsure if it's related. People are talking about Tim Pool. Because Tim Pool said, Tim Pool is incoherent on Twitter. He says, the Jews run the world, people, are so cringe. Holy shit. This is the man. Who published a music video clip, Tim Pool music video cringe. This is a man who's been singing some of the cringiest stuff around. I mean,
he ever wanted.
This is the guy, Tim Pool, educating us about what is cringe right now. And Viva Frey, even Viva Frey, a Jew himself, says, give credit where credit is due. Jews Run the World is certainly catchier and pithier than the arguably more accurate. There is statistical overrepresentation of Jews in positions of power, from politics to science to arts to literature, such that people could reasonably conclude that said overrepresentation could lead to disproportionate influence in said fields of politics, science, arts, and literature, to the point where people could correlate any crisis in the said fields of politics, science, arts, and literature to the influence of people who are Jews. Correct? And the shorthand for it is just as good, you know? But yeah, ultimately it boils down to there is overrepresentation and it creates problems. Because we cannot tell whether the decisions are being made fairly by these people. And in fact, we have evidence that they are not made fairly. They are not made in a disinterested way. They are made in an ethnically interested way. Whether we're talking about the military, the finance sector, the media, there's always this favoritism, and it's problematic. Western Kind says, JF, these characters neither are capable nor interested in legitimate discussion. Their pursuit, rather, is villainy signaling and social benefits derived therefrom. Brilliantly said. I think you are absolutely correct, which is why I've accepted the debate only to show that ultimately it's not going to happen. But my policy is to always accept debate. Now, I know that this guy is not going to want to debate. I know he's not going to want to be on a fair platform. So I know it's probably not going to happen. But it's still my job to naively accept the debate just to show that it's not me the problem. I answered to Tim Pool. I said, whether they run the world is up to debate. But there is certainly no doubt they do run Timcast. I mean, this is the summum of hypocrisy. Tim Pool just sold his entire operation to the Daily Wire, Jews. So Tim Pool, whether they control the world or not, sure, we can leave this to a later debate. But they control you, Tim. They have you. They control the beanie. They control what happens below the beanie. They've been controlling you for years, really, with censorship and ultimately leading you to take your show in a direction that you took because you are influenced by censorship. Rodi Lacid says, but I think nobody is saying that Jews control everything, just that there is a statistical overrepresentation. Does Tim understand per capita? I think Tim is aware of the 12% of blacks meme, but Jewish statistical representation is just coincidence? Oh no, I think they know, but these people don't want to engage with the point, and so they fight a straw man. That's just what's happening. Every time you see someone debunk a race or Israel-related point, and they don't argue against someone, they make up the claim, and it's always an over-exaggerated claim. So that they can say, oh, see, they don't control everything. And it's like, yeah, no one has said literally everything. There's just too much control. Let's talk about it. Elon Musk is going in a dangerous direction. He says the fixed pie fallacy is at the heart of much wrong-headed economic thinking. There is essentially infinite potential for job and company creation. Think of all the things that didn't exist 20 or 30 years ago. That is a very dangerous direction because that is precisely the delusion that has led society to take a wrong turn. The delusion of eternal growth. This concept that, hey, since we're making up jobs, since once you have someone making robots, he needs to eat, so we need a cook to make food for the guy that makes robots. So we are in an ever-growing bubble of human accomplishments. And the problem is nothing can grow forever. And the fact that we forgot this led us to assume forever that there would be 15% growth in the market and the stock market and the value of companies. And when we don't meet that 10 to 15% growth, politicians are making bad decisions with our countries, like, oh, let's import migrants to up our GDP. And you are stuck in a loop of self-deception here, because the migrants you import don't actually add value to your society, and you are running after your own tail until the whole system crumbles. So I said there is a fallacy on the other side, Elon, the infinite growth fallacy, which you are committing. As a system grows, there is essentially infinite potential ways for ways of parasitizing it for exploiters. Because of the limits of physics, at one point, the system crashes because it inevitably becomes unable to shut down the growth of this parasitism. Nothing is infinite, but the capacity of the universe to take down structure. And the structures of self-deception of Western civilization will be taken down by entropy. Ian Malcolm said, GDP goes up. It's the ultimate fallacy of the elite, Republicans, and economic advocates for globalism. It's accompanied by an absolute indifference with the social and cultural repercussions or the impact on the middle class, which has been getting sabotaged. Exactly. It's let's grow forever. We will always create more wealth and more wealth and more demand and more GDP. But at some point, the people who are enacting these inflation of the GDP are very different from the people you had before, and they have unaccounted for costs, like putting people on fire in the subway. Merry Christmas, everyone. That's it for tonight. I'll be on a break for Christmas family celebration tomorrow night, and then I'll be back on the 26th. Much love. Merry Christmas. Go open your gifts. Go to your village church or whatever it is that you do on the 24th. I wanted to drink some alcohol today, but given that I've been leaving Prince Edward Island in a hurry, I had all these bottles of alcohol, and I don't drink. I don't drink very much, but I had a collection of 12 bottles of whiskey, bourbon, and as I was cleaning the home for my last cleanup of the home before selling it, I started getting stuff outside, and two 80-year-old ladies, like really like difficulty to walk. Like they were driving in front, and they come and they say, "Sir, why do you have all this stuff on your grass?" And I was like, "I'm selling the house. I don't have any more place in my car. So anything you want, you see on the grass here, you can take for yourself. I'll be happy because the rest is going to the trash." And I'm like, "By the way, ladies, do you like alcohol?" And they were like, "Alcohol?" And I was like, "Yeah, like strong alcohol, not wine, but more like bourbon, whiskey." And they said, "Oh, sure, we'll take anything you got." And so I start going inside and I pull out my 12 bottles, gigantic bottles. Some of them were like 2 liters bottle of whiskey, 1.41 liter bottles of bourbon. I take this gigantic bottle, and there was these two 80-year-old women were like, "Well, thank you, sir. I can't believe you're giving all of this." And it was kind of an early Christmas, because I couldn't put these bottles in my car. My car was already filled with the most important stuff, like my mic, my microphone, my computer, my block clock to follow the price of Bitcoin. I cannot take these bottles of alcohol, especially since I don't drink. I don't care about this. So I was very happy that two 80-year-old women will just drink themselves into a massive sleep if they only take 1% of the alcohol I gave to them. That is my Christmas story. It happened before Christmas. It happened about a month ago, but when I sold the house. But that opened the season of Christmas to me. Also, another Christmas story is Abdul, who I met on the way, right after I got in trouble with the authorities in Prince Edward Island and Quebec. At the very last time, when the SWAT team came for me and I drove into them and I surrendered and they didn't even arrest me, when all of this was finished, I was driving my car to get back to my family, who I had already put in safety, so they weren't affected by all of this. But I was driving and driving and driving. And, you know, sometimes it was like 16 hours of driving, then sleep, then 16 hours of driving. And it was 6 a.m. The sun was rising and I was at a gas station. I filled my car of gas. You know, that's all I do. When I'm intense on driving, it's like I stop, I pay with credit card at the pump, fill the car with gas, and boom, I'm back. So I fill my car with gas. I leave the place of the gas station. Then there's a stop. I stop at the stop, and there's a minivan that comes the other way. And there's a guy, like an Abdul type of guy, like Dubai, Middle Eastern, Arab, kind of Eastern European, also kind of race. And I see that he's with his wife with a veil, so kind of Muslim styled. And he descends his window, and I'm at the stop, and I'm like, listen to me, Abdul. I don't want any fucking trouble. I am just out of absolute fucking state oppression. I've been cracked down on by fucking SWAT teams in my own nation. I want this day to be relaxed. I don't want any fucking trouble. And he descends in his window, and you know, I should have just driven forward. I should have just driven forward to save myself the trouble. He says, hey, bro, I need a couple hundred, bro. Couple hundred, just a couple hundred. And I'm like, I need gasoline. I'm like, holy fucking hell, he needs gas. I'm going there. I need to carry my wife. See, my wife is crying. And the wife, like, every time he was saying, my wife is crying, see? She was like, oh, oh. She was crying like a robot exactly at the right time just to be part of his performance. And I was like, you know what? I'm above budget in my fucking fleeing of the state. I've been definancialized. They cut my credit cards out, but I outplayed them. I'm stacked with cash. I can give some cash and get out of this fucking problem. And I'm like, I'm starting to pull my wallet and I'm like, hopefully there's a $5 in there or a $10 in there. I throw it to him and he's going to leave me alone. It's not super costly. $5 to have peace after you've been through all this. I open my wallet and there's a gigantic stack of $50 and $100, but zero change. And I'm like, oh, there's only 50s and 100. And I'm like, you know what, Jeff? This is your peaceful moment. This is your spa moment. I'm going to give him $50. I'm like, I have plenty of money in my wallet. I'm under budget. I've been successful at doing all this driving across Canada below the price. My gas efficiency is perfect. Fuck it. I'm going to buy peace for $50. I take the $50. I said, you need gas? You need gas. Here's $50. I'm going to buy peace. You know what this fucker does? He takes the $50. He puts it in his pocket. And he says, bro, I need a couple hundred, bro. Look, I got all this gold, bro. Bro, look, this ring, bro. This is worth $500 in Dubai, bro. Just bought it in Dubai. Look, this chain. And he undoes his chain. This worth $1,500. So you got $2,000 of gold. And he removes his earring. and he fucking throws them into my car. He says, I need more than $50. And I'm like, Abdul, you have just broken the etiquette of what I was willing to do here. Up to now, I was very much willing to pay $50 for you to go away. And if you had a long-term thinking with this, you wouldn't be throwing your fucking dirty gold at me. You would be thinking, hey, if I got $50 from this one kind Canadian, perhaps I can get another $50 and another $50 from the next passerby. And eventually I will get to my couple hundred. So Abdul, you've just betrayed yourself. I was willing to play the game of $50 for free to you. Now you throw gold into my car. You try to pressure me into buying gold. And you are entering a completely different game, Abdul. Because now you are asking for me to open an impromptu gold exchange, which I'm willing to do. Let us examine the quality of your gold. I gather the ring on the floor. It's a massive ring. And I'm like, the mass of it is pretty good. The shininess of it indicates that it's actual gold. I look at the inside. There's an encryption for 18 carats. And I'm like, in a pawn shop, this is where we have $233 of gold right here. Now, I do not know about your bracelets and your collar. So I gather all of the gold that he had thrown in my car. And I put it in my hand and I'm like, let's test if Jesus exists and if he cares about me. I think I might get shot. But I'm going to put all this gold in my hand. And I look at Abdul and I say, I'm giving you back your gold because you insulted me. I want my $50 back. Take it out of your pocket and give it to me right now. And as I say this, I'm like, this guy's going to take a gun and pow, pow. I'm like, this could be the moment where my life ends, but I am a principled man. And I was willing to play the game of the kind Canadian donor. I was even willing to play the game of an impromptu gold exchange. But not in this circumstance where he has put the $50 that I gave him in his pocket to extort me and then throws me gold to force me to give him more. And I look at my wallet and I'm like, I have tens of thousands of dollars in cash. And I'm like, I could buy this gold. But I don't want it, because if we're going to play JF is running his own pawn shop at a stop intersection in fucking Mississauga, Ontario, you're going to have to play the game correctly, Abdul, and I want my $50 back! So Abdul is like, bro, the stuff you say, I'm not sure I understand. All I'm saying is I need a couple hundred. I said, I want my $50 back. Here's the totality of all your gold. I have collected it back from the floor of my car. I want my $50 back. And he's like, bro, my wife is crying, bro. I need this $50. Well, exactly. So you should have accepted it when it was for free. Now you want me to market some gold. You're going to have to pay a premium, Abdul. I don't know about gold. And Abdul takes back his gold, but not wanting to give me back my $50. And he looks at his ring and he says, bro, I don't fully understand, but I need this $50. Here's my ring. He gives me the ring that was worth, in my estimation, with, of course, margins of error, because I am not a gold specialist. I am not a balance. I cannot fully accurately balance gold, but I kind of know the market, and I'm like, this is worth anywhere between $10 and $600 with the confidence interval averaging at $233. I'm paying $50 for this ring. That would be a gain for me, especially since I was willing to give that $50 for free. Abdul, keeps his $50 into his pocket, and he gives me the ring and he says, "Bro, here's the ring. Thank you for the $50." Just to say, we are in Canada. I shouldn't have to educate a fucking Dubai Middle Easterner Arab about the etiquette of gold trade on the street. And yet I did. So a citizen like me, a white citizen of Canada, brings more value than is actually recorded on the paper, you know? I changed people. I taught Abdul the basics of long-term thinking. Rodila says, was he a doctor? Could be a doctor, really. These days, pretty much, you have a wide diversity of doctors. But Abdul, in the end, because of his lack of talent, ended up having to give me a ring because I was insulted. Where he didn't have to give me a ring. If he had just accepted my $50, I would have left him alone, and he leaves me alone. Now, he's got his $50. I didn't give any more. I played this little game of gold exchange, and he had to give me a ring. Frog Eyes says, this is a shockingly common type of hustle. Never happened to me, but I've heard other accounts of similar stories. Oh, yeah, they were totally... They were so trained. Like, the woman was playing her part like a fucking professional actress, just speaking in turn, crying even in turn. Like, if you're actually genuinely crying, you have a lack of control over your emotion. If your crying happens exactly at the same time where your husband says, "See, she's crying. See how she's crying?" that is some sort of fucking dishonest affair. That being said, I don't know that I've been scammed. I still have to weigh that ring properly and analyze it for, is it full content of gold, or is it an alliage of some sort? Is it a gold-painted other? Is there some sort of other metal at the core of it? But let me tell you, it looks like gold to me. And perhaps I may lose money, but I was willing to. You want to see it? You want to see the ring? Give me one moment. All right, here we have the ring. It looks to me, like, certainly this surface doesn't betray itself to be anything else than gold. So that's the ring. It's pretty massive. Looking into it, I see 18K engraved into it. Now, it's a cheap scorpion illustrated ring. It's not beautiful to me. But, you know, if anyone knows where this ring originates from and how could I prove the validity of the gold, it looks like gold to me. I mean, I don't know. It is very massive. Do you bite it? Yeah, I've made an indentation in it. Look at that little indentation. It's going to be hard to focus, but yeah, I made a point with my canine in it. Listen, I think I'm going to be profitable on this. And the goal was not to be profitable. The goal was first to get Abdul out of the fucking way. Okay? But in the process of getting Abdul out of the fucking way, I thought, why not turn this into a learning experiment? You know, at $50, I feel I could be in profit. I could be losing. Maybe I arrive at the pawn shop and someone is telling me, JF, this is mostly aluminum. There's an outside of coverage of gold. You're down to $35 worth of gold. Okay, I lost $15. But I think there's a chance that that there's a good share of gold in this. I don't know. I don't know about gold, but I wanted to challenge myself and make it a learning experience, because if you're going to be pursued by the state, why not engage in some street trading, you know? When they get to you and they start definancializing you, I was like, hey, I need to diversify here. I don't know exactly how one extracts gold from Abdul on the street. Here's an occasion to try to do it. A Sumerian says, gold foiled tungsten is the latest gold scam out of China and Arabia. I mean, I'm sure the scams are plenty. But we're not sure that this ring is a scam. You know, maybe it was a genuine ring that, whatever. I mean, what a shitty looking ring. I mean, I can't wait to melt this shit and test the full gold content of it. John Drake says, it's probably real. Bars are usually faked. Too much trouble to fool with one ring. Exactly. You know, his story makes sense. The guy looks retarded. He says he comes from Dubai. There was consistency.